ॐ ज्ञानतिमिरन्नस्य ज्ञानञ्जनाशलाकाय चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे
हरे कृष्ण. वेलकम टू इस्कान ऑफ सिलिकॉन वैली. आई एम हैप्पी टू बी बैक हियर. इट्स माय होम एंड एवरीबडी नीड्स अ होम. वी आर ऑल सर्चिंग फॉर होम. सो द scarcity in the material world is a constant feeling that people have. In fact, in the study of economics, the science begins with announcing that the scarce resources of the world, the very foundation of the science of economics, is how to deal with the scarcity of resources and the law of supply and demand. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said that actually the only scarcity in this world is the scarcity of Krishna consciousness. And if we look carefully through the Bhagavad Gita, we find that the primary cause for happiness is for knowing where to place one's attention and where to keep one's mind, how to fix one's mind on the object that will actually satisfy us. There are ways in which I'm looking everywhere to try to find something satisfactory for my mind. And nowadays, there are more and more images that come before me and as proposals, as proposed items for satisfaction for my mind. Can you name any of them that you've seen recently that have been put before you in the media or through your conversations with others? Advertisement for certain kinds of food that we won't mention. There's ways in which it's presented as, you know, the object of satisfaction will actually satisfy you. What kind of gadgets? iPhone 10. And what about? Another gadget?
It's a spy gadget which reminds you of what you need to do at the same time.
A gadget that reminds you what you need to do. Okay. Of course, you have to tell it which things you want to do. And you have to know what to do. There are images, yes?
Cosmetics.
There are certainly automobiles, houses, images of people that are supposedly desirable and so forth. And all these are presented as candidates for our attention, where to put our mind. And the problem is that none of these objects satisfy us. Wherever I look, whatever the proposed object is, I may contemplate it for some time, but then I'll become frustrated with it. So, Krishna consciousness is elusively simple. Krishna says, man mana pavamad bhakto, fix your mind upon me. Bhakti is very simple. It means to readjust the mind so that you're fixing it on the one object that will actually bring satisfaction. And when we read the Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam, the philosophical points are meant to bring us to that conclusion. And as Krishna mentions in the Bhagavad Gita, once you come to that conclusion, then you have perfect knowledge. Yo mam eva masam mudho janati purushottamam sasarva vid bhajatimam sarva bhavina bharata. That one who has come to this focus of thinking of Krishna as the ultimate object of satisfaction is actually in full knowledge. Now, how to do that effectively was taught to us by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who gave the science of the holy name. And in his Shikshashtaka, he says, Nam Namakari Bahudan Nija Sarva Shaktis. That the The Lord is fully present with all his energies in his holy name. All his energies means his form, his lila, his qualities, is all present there. So as a practical matter, one can repeat the names of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and fix one's mind on hearing the sound. And as Prabhupada points out in his talks, seeing is overrated. Hearing is more important. And if you listen carefully to the vibration of the Hare Krishna mantra, you'll notice that it satisfies our sense for focusing the mind on something, on an object. And we'll naturally feel that we're getting what we want, what we need. That means satisfaction. Bhakti parishanu bhavu ani bhakti parishanu bhava viraktir anyata traisha trika eka kala. The Srimad Bhagavatam says, just as a hungry person eats food and gets nourishment, satisfaction, and eradication of hunger. So in a similar way, when you meditate on Krishna, when you surrender to Krishna, you give your attention there, then you'll also naturally feel a sense of home. What is that home feeling? That is that we are looking for the object of our affection. We want to place our attention somewhere that will be satisfactory. And that's the experience of bhakti. It's a natural feeling that we're all looking for an object of satisfaction, but we're not finding it. But when one puts one's attention towards Krishna, towards his instructions, towards service towards Krishna, towards meditating on him, towards chanting Hare Krishna, with a philosophical understanding that he's personally present in his name, then one feels bhakti, natural satisfaction of the heart. And the propensity to give our reverence and our love towards an object. And anubhava means that one sees it directly for oneself. It's not philosophical, but it's actually directly perceived. As Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, pratyaksha avagamam dharmyam, that the perfection of dharma is that you can see for yourself that you're in contact with the Supreme. And then thirdly, the verse that I just quoted says, virakta anyatracha, which means that you, by focusing your mind on the supreme object of satisfaction, naturally become detached from other objects which are inferior, and you can see the difference for yourself. Oftentimes, I focus my mind on one object and another, and this is because the mind is looking for that satisfaction, and there are ever newer candidates. But the Bhagavad Gita, in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, yan labha chaparam labham manyate, that when the mind becomes focused on the supreme object, which is Krishna, then one experiences that the feeling that there's no greater gain, there's no better object to place my mind on. And that feeling increases. It doesn't diminish as it does in the case of material objects. So the practice of chanting Hare Krishna is a meditation on the supreme object. There are ways of focusing the mind on the breath, and this helps to bring oneself to an awareness of one's being alive, of that one's inhabiting a body, one's not the body, but inhabiting the body and so forth, being aware that you're aware and so forth. But minus the repository, which we're all looking for, which is the supreme object, which gives full satisfaction upon which we place our mind, we can at any time be deviated because of lack of a higher taste. Vishaya vini vartante niraharasa dehina rasavarjam rasopyasya paramjishva nivartate. One has to see for oneself that here's an object that's completely satisfactory. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu therefore recommended that Krishna, because he's in his name fully, and that one practice this chanting of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra and give one's full attention to the chanting and understand philosophically that by doing so, one is fully engaging in yoga in the real sense of the term, that is reconnecting with the supreme object of our meditation, which will bring full satisfaction, and in which we'll feel reciprocation, which is the other aspect of bhakti, which means as we give our attention to the supreme object of worship, then he reciprocates with us in kind. As Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, ye yatamam prapadyante tamstataiva bhajamyam. So the thing about Lord Chaitanya's process, Nartam Das Thakur says, or is it Lochan Das Thakur, that it's kevala anandat kanda, is simply joyful. As in the Kali Yuga age, things are really mixed up. Philosophies are deviant in many different ways, and I think people are lazy, Sutta Goswami said, about the process of spiritual life. Actually, it's the sages in Aimasaranya noticed that. They said, Prayanal Payushashabhya Kalavasmin Yugejana Mandasu Mandamatayo Mandabhakya Hupadrita. In this iron age of Kali, men are but short lives. They're quarrelsome, lazy, misguided, unlucky, and above all, always disturbed. But before I say anything more, I offer my respectful obeisances to His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, and to all the devotees who are present here today and online all over the world. Hare Krishna. Because, what was I just saying? Before I... Yeah, Prayanal Payushashabhya. Men have but short lives. And it's an important consideration to make about... time, because time is our most valuable asset. We think about it often more in a more concentrated way at the beginning of the year, because when the calendar turns over again, it feels like you have a chance to start over again, doesn't it? Do you all feel like that?
Yes.
People get a little joyful and they think, well, maybe I'll have another shot at life. I can start over again, even though I messed up everything else. Let's try again. And so renewal happens at this time of year, another way to reorganize oneself. And there's a sense that we're being moved along by time, but we should see how valuable it is. For instance, there are other entities in the world like llamas and alpacas. You know what they are? An alpaca? It's a strange-looking animal, and llamas are just a larger version. Well, I don't want to insult either one of them. Maybe they don't like each other, I don't know. But in any case, they look very similar. And they're beasts. They're unaware of dharma. They're aware of their immediate environment, and they're aware of the fact that they're fearful in many situations, and that they're hungry, and that they have urges for mating, and so forth. But they're not aware of dharma, they're not aware of inquiry into the absolute truth, and so forth. And the way in which the universe is set up, there are 8,400,000 species of life, and out of all of them, the human life is the life that offers an opportunity to inquire about the Supreme. There's a special urge that the human has or can arise within the human, and that is to inquire about what is the purpose of life? How can I become free from suffering? What is the ultimate purpose of life? Now, if you consider the fact that the soul doesn't have a choice when it gets put into other forms of life, and that it has to wait to transmigrate till it comes to human form of life to ask these questions, which are problem-solving questions. It's the way in which one can actually solve all the problems that one has by interacting with the material world. And that's been going on since the time immemorial. If you take birth as a llama, you have to wait. And once you leave the body of a lama, you have to wait till you go to the next transmigration, and then you have to wait till you go through that. There's a whole cycle you have to wait to go through. The first time I saw some of the pictures that Prabhupada had put forth when I started reading the Hare Krishna information, and I saw the pictures of all the different species of life and then the human emerging, I was shocked by what I had been through and felt suddenly fortunate to be in a position where I had the opportunity to inquire. And if you take a moment to think about the various species of life and the way in which, even in the form of demigods, demigods have to wait until their particular term of existence is over. It's especially, according to the Srimad Bhagavatam, beneficial to be in the human form of life. So be happy that you're human. In fact, I just read in the fifth canto that demigods are eager to trade in their pious credits in order to take birth as human beings, especially in Kali Yuga, to take advantage of the opportunity. Human beings are in a middle position. We're being pulled from above and we're being pulled from below. And another important item to remember is that demigods are always delighted because of their situation in material nature. It's more tinged by goodness, and they have opulence to live in and a long life. So they're happy. Just like if someone gives you credit cards and says, you can spend unlimitedly. And not only that, all your health care is covered. In fact, you'll never get sick even, so don't even worry about that. Then, and starts throwing in a bunch of things like that, you'll suddenly feel, wow, I'm pretty happy. So demigods are like that. They're delighted. Animals are always fearful. And human beings are always in anxiety. Do you find that to be true? So don't worry about it. It's okay. It's natural to be in anxiety. And the reason is, the human is being pulled from above and from below. We're right in the middle position. There's a natural way that we'll always be in anxiety as a human being. However, there's a very important distinction for the human beings. Labvam sudurlabham idam bahu sambhavante. It's very rare to get a human body, but when you get it, you have a great opportunity. The opportunity isn't necessarily to become free from anxiety, but it's actually to become free from the cycle of birth and death and to become liberated from the material world altogether. And from our point of view, under following Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, to develop a love for God. Prema Pumarta Mahan, that's the ultimate goal of the soul. The goal of the soul is to develop this love for God, which is the ultimate form of liberation. And so we have the opportunity in the human form of life, and this is a great boon. And so the anxiety that one might have can simply be transferred from anxiety to try to get comfortable here in the material world to the anxiety that it takes to situate oneself in a valid spiritual practice and continue it despite all the other distractions that are going on. That takes some stress and anxiety itself. For instance, if you have to regulate your senses, they're going to push back a little bit. Do you find that to be true? Or is it? Do your mind and senses just cooperate with you? So there's some stress in that. There's some anxiety, and that's what Sri Rishabhdev says is the purpose of human life: is to take on that kind of stress for the purpose of advancing spiritually. He says, "Nayam deho deha bhajram nriloke, kashtam kamam arhate vidbujamye." Tapo divyam putraka yena sattvam shud yet yasmat brahma saukyam tvanantam. And the verse I just quoted is basically a summary of everything I've said so far. And that is that one shouldn't envy the animals or try to imitate them, because what they're getting is not that great. But what the human being has is certainly great. It's an opportunity to perform tapo divyam, which means to take some anxiety, some trouble for the supreme, for a higher cause. And by taking that kind of anxiety into one's life, one will then come to a position of saukhyam twanantam, which means happiness that doesn't end. So that's the worthy cause that one can attain in the human form of life. And Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has made it altogether possible for everybody in the age of Kali Yuga to do that. Happy New Year, everyone. How is everybody? Happy to be alive? Yes? Okay. So, one way to assure longevity in one's spiritual practice and to be constantly in awe of the world that we're in is to assume nothing. Okay, put the Gita on it. Thank you. Very thoughtful of you. And to start over as a beginner. This is the practice of devotional service. Be akinchana, which means don't assume that you have anything. If you remain hungry and think, I don't have anything yet, then there's a lot more to get. And if you think, I'm already more advanced than everybody, and that was all I was hoping for, then you'll find a plateau. And that is dangerous. Plateaus are dangerous for humans. We need to be constantly stimulated. For any discipline, one has to remain on the edge and be moving forward. So cultivating the beginner's mind, as the Buddhists say, start over every day as I'm a beginner, and don't assume anything. Don't assume that you know anything or that you're advanced in any way. And in that way, you'll be open for special mercy. And that's important in the practice of Krishna consciousness. I bring this up because, as I said, the new year is a time of renewal. That, when Prabhupada was, someone wished Prabhupada a happy new year, Prabhupada said, every day is a happy new year for us. Because we're starting over every day. We see every moment as a new year, as a new opportunity, because Krishna's newer and newer, and our interaction with the world in this mood of seeing everything as a unique opportunity to advance in Krishna consciousness. It's ever fresh. So the experience that one tries to get on the calendar year of saying, Happy New Year, I'm starting over, we can do that all the time at every second by taking this mood, akinchana. Which mood?
Akinchana.
Kinchana means I have something, I already possess something. Akinchana means this mood of feeling bereft. I don't have anything. And it's actually a state of satisfaction to feel like that, because then one opens oneself to all the grace that comes pouring in. For instance, if you chant japa with a feeling of intense need, that I need Krishna's mercy, I'm helpless, and you chant like that, then you'll see that Krishna's present there before you in his name, and he's filling you up. So that's important to have on a regular basis. Therefore, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, cultivate above all else, trinadapi sunichena. Be in a humble state of mind, a humble state of mind. There are all kinds of states of mind. There was a famous singer, he's still alive somewhere, Billy Joel, and he sang a song, I'm in a New York state of mind. You can be in a New York state of mind. You can be in a... You can be in a depressed state of mind, a woe is me state of mind. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu recommended be in a humble state of mind. Cultivate this humble state of mind. And he said, if you remember this constantly and come back to this as your predominating attitude in life of being humble, that means, he said, feeling yourself lower than the grass and be more tolerant than a tree. And he gave the definition in relationship to the tree, because trees, even though they're being beat by the sun, they still render service to other people. Even when they're cut down, they still offer their service. They go on serving others. And they don't say anything. They just serve. So that's something that one can look forward to, because it opens one to all the gifts that Krishna is giving us at every minute, but I'm missing because I'm already full. I already have something. Queen Kunti said that we may have all kinds of ideas about what I already have. Janma, Aishwarya, Shuta, Shribir, Irmanam Rapumand. She mentioned that I have an attitude that I already have something. I'm already advanced because I have a high birth, because I'm beautiful, and so forth. And these are a kind of intoxication that keep us from advancing in spiritual life. So one can cultivate this attitude of trinadapisinichena, of being humble and being lower than the grass. And also, one can certainly practice showing respect to others, but not taking any respect in return. Just notice that the next time you have a conversation, how the ego wants to insert himself in the conversation. And when the person is talking about how they had some success in their life, what kind of success did they have? They just passed the GED or the, what is that, SA? GREs with a really high score, and then you're waiting till they stop talking so you can tell them you know somebody else who did much better than they did, or or that you did better. Whatever it is, there's always a way to present oneself as a superior. And one might do it even unknowingly. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, be aware of this and practice this wherever you go, showing respect to others and not expecting any respect for oneself. Because as one does that, one may see that actually I'm getting my real nourishment from Krishna's attention. One develops an inner awareness that I'm not dependent on other people giving me accolades, but I am certainly dependent on Krishna noticing that I have a service attitude towards him. That's really fulfilling. So now that it's the new year, I would like to ask all of you, what is your 100-year goal? You've heard about one-year goals, right? They talk about this in school. One-year goals, three-year goals, five-year goals. Those seem like a long time, right? What's your 100-year goal? Become a living 100. Okay, in 100 years, where will you all be in 100 years? Let's first start thinking about that. Anyone? Do you know where you'll be? Vantika, how old will you be? 100 and 114? Can you imagine Avantika as 114? She's a fresh youth now, but you know she'll be 114 someday. And some of us will be 161. Time goes on, it's inexorable. It's carrying us in a certain direction. And oftentimes, I think of goals in terms of what's going to happen in a year, 3 years, 5 years, but how about 100 years? Why not plan for that? The fact is that one can plan for that because the soul is imperishable, it doesn't die. So you might as well think past the finish line of this lifetime or of the very short amounts of time that one normally creates goals in this lifetime. Think about a 100-year goal. I want you to think about it as homework. Just meditate. Where am I going to be in 100 years? It changes the perspective a little bit, thinking about that. Don't you think?
Yes.
So now I'm going to read from the Bhagavad Gita 4:24, because I'd like to make a point, and that is that whatever we contribute to, that is, especially whatever we give our attention to, as I began the talk tonight, we will grow in that direction. And this verse, 424, the translation of which is, a person who is fully absorbed in Krishna consciousness is sure to attain the spiritual kingdom because of his full contribution to spiritual activities in which the consummation is absolute and that which is offered is of the same spiritual nature. Purport. How activities in Krishna consciousness can lead one ultimately to the spiritual goal is described here. There are various activities in Krishna consciousness, and all of them will be described in the following verses. But for the present, just the principle of Krishna consciousness is described. A conditioned soul entangled in material contamination is sure to act in the material atmosphere, and yet he has to get out of such an environment. The process by which the conditioned soul can get out of the material atmosphere is Krishna consciousness. For example, a patient who is suffering from a disorder of the bowels due to overindulgence in milk products is cured by another milk product, namely curds. The materially absorbed conditioned soul can be cured by Krishna consciousness as set forth here in the Gita. This process is generally known as yajna, or activities, sacrifices, simply meant for the satisfaction of Vishnu or Krishna. The more the activities of the material world are performed in Krishna consciousness, or for Vishnu only, the more the atmosphere becomes spiritualized by complete absorption. So this principle, and it can be taken anywhere and utilized, and it's called yajna. Everyone say yajna. Yeah. So you get two choices in human life, two basic broad categories of choice. One is called yajna, and the other one is called suffering. So by yajna, you put yourself out, and somebody who is a beginner in practicing yajna may feel suffering from doing the yajna. But what follows any bona fide yajna, that means giving one's energy, one's resources to Krishna, is a feeling of satisfaction that cannot be attained anywhere through any endeavor in the material world. The endeavors in the material world, starting from the process of thinking, feeling, and willing, which comes from the linga sharira, that's our subtle body, that's where our impetus starts from in this world. We think, feel, and will, and then we manifest in outwardly in the material world. We set out into the forest of material enjoyment to try to find our fortune. But the Bhagavatam tells us that we only become more and more lost and bewildered and affronted by the sufferings of the material world when we do that. However, we can turn our attention toward yajna, which means making a sacrifice for the Supreme. And it's a very precise method. It means to understand, first of all, who the Supreme is and the methodology for giving to the Supreme. And if one does that, then the world begins to transform around one. And all the items that were oppressing us before in our lives become the cause of our liberation. Everything transforms from material to spiritual as we engage it in the service of the Supreme. So, Srila Prabhupada continues. He says, the word Brahma, Brahman, means spiritual. Do we have an extra microphone over here? Okay, keep reading from that point.
Hare Krishna. The word Brahma means spiritual. The Lord is spiritual, and the rays of his transcendental body are called Brahma Jyotir, his spiritual effulgence. Everything that exists is situated in that Brahma Jyotir. But when the Jyoti is covered by illusion, maya, or sense gratification, it is called material. This material veil can be removed at once by Krishna consciousness, thus the offering for the sake of Krishna consciousness, the consuming agent of such an offering or contribution, the process of consumption, the contributor and the result are all combined together, Brahman, or the absolute truth. The absolute truth covered by Maya is called matter. Matter dovetailed for the cause of the absolute truth regains its spiritual quality. Krishna consciousness is the process of converting the illusory consciousness into Brahman, or the Supreme. When the mind is fully absorbed in Krishna consciousness, it is said to be in samadhi or trance. Anything done in such transcendental consciousness is called yajna, or sacrifice for the absolute. In that condition of spiritual consciousness, the contribution, the consumption, the performer or leader of the performance, and the result or ultimate gain, everything becomes one in the absolute, the supreme Brahman. That is the method of Krishna consciousness.
When you read that, what imagery came into your mind?
It talked a lot about like the contributor, so I was thinking of people.
So what scene were you seeing, any of you? Like, what it's describing is the way in which... Go ahead, Sukeshwari.
I was remembering the shloka of Hiran Mahina Patrina, where you're praying to the Lord to take away the effulgence so that I will be able to see His beautiful form. So similarly, if I pray to Krishna, if I'm completely absorbed in Krishna consciousness, automatically the material world, which is part actually of the Brahmajyoti itself, but it has, it's covered by Maya, the Maya Devi would reveal the curtains and we will be able to see Krishna.
Okay, thank you. I'm thinking in very practical terms of, you know, scenes that you're used to seeing of yajna being performed. Yes.
I was thinking about the yajna being performed, and there are many brahmanas, and one is who is chanting, he is benefited, the one for whose favor is being benefited, and the, you know, we are praying to the Vishnu, then where it is going, so that picture emerges.
So you're seeing one of the, like an Agnihotra of fire yajna. What other scenes that you're used to seeing? Virginia Kumar. Okay. 1, 2. Get a microphone back there.
I was just thinking how it actually relates to all the seminars that you give on book distribution, that you say that the wood that the person carries is nothing but the books that you carry. But I was just thinking how it's like something that you do practically. Any service in temple or anywhere, but especially the yajna, where the car that you take, the house that you own,
yes,
the money that you spend in the fuel,
yes,
the time that you spend to go and stand there, or even if you're just being with the devotees, whatever it is, it's everything becomes spiritualized. And I have personally seen that that sometimes we think that the persons who come later in Krishna consciousness are more new beginners than, like, if we have been in Krishna consciousness for 20 years. But not until I went for book distribution with them and I see them glorify Krishna consciousness, I could see how they have spiritualized their life, how they think that everything they have is for Krishna. But then I was taken aback that I don't know Bhagavatam, because they have spiritualized their life, they have that desire. So everything in right in front of my eyes, I see how their spiritual consciousness, they become Krishna conscious, the contributor, which is the person who's doing, and the contribution that they are doing, and the person who's receiving the consumption, the performer, and everything becomes spiritualized.
So yeah, very. This is very practical, because we're all living in a apparently very materialistic part of the world, and we're engaged in activities that some people might consider material. But when the yajna is in effect, we're using all those items. Please get me the 10th canto, 14th chapter, in the verse that says that unless everything's engaged in the service of the Lord, it becomes foot shackles. And so it's a very practical point that Krishna is making here, because one might think I have to retire to the forest in order to be spiritual, or I have to be in the middle of the fire yajna, actually ladling the ghee. But the way that yajna is conceived of here is that everything in the material world is actually spiritual, but when it's reconnected with its ultimate purpose, which is to serve Krishna, then it takes back its original spiritual quality. And this is very important because we can't just break away from the everyday situation that we're in. However, it can be transformed. And if we have a bigger idea about the purpose of our life, then we'll grow into that. You will become as small as your controlling desire or as great as your dominant aspiration. As Shukadev Goswami mentions this principle about how those engaged in household life become liberated or bound according to the way in which they're using everything. There's an interesting kind of a conch shell noise that's going on. And it's a new thing here. A new sound effect. This is from Bhagavatam 10.14.36. Tavat ragadayastenas tavat karagraham graham tavan mohon gri nigado yavat krishna natejanaha. My dear Lord Krishna, until people become your devotees, their material attachments and desires remain thieves, their homes remain prisons, and their affectionate feelings for their family members remain foot shackles. Would you like to hear it again? 10.14.36. It's from Yajna. Y'all are doing too much Yajna here. You're causing the rains to fall. There it is. Have a look. Exhibit A. This is Pramanam. This is from Srimad Bhagavatam, the highest authority. So these kinds of verses can direct our lives. If we depend on these types of philosophical underpinnings, then we'll be able to perform yajna wherever we go, and we'll be able to transform our environment, wherever it may be, from material to spiritual. Spiritual means liberation and happiness, and material means that we become bound and full of anxiety. So, I'll say, please repeat. Tavat raga dayastenas. Tavat kara graham graham. Tavan mohon grin nikado. Yavat Krishna nutejana natejanaha. The more yajna we do, the more it rains. Tavat for that long. Raga adaya. Material attachment and so on. Stena. Thieves. Tavat. For that long. Kara graham. A prison. Graham. One's home. It's Kurukshetra. They're getting ready with the conch shells. Tavat. For that long. Moha. The bewilderment of family affection. Angri. Upon their feet. Nigada. Shackles. Yavat. As long as. Krishna. O Lord Krishna. Na. Do not become. Te. Your devotees. Janaha. Any persons. I'll say. My dear Lord Krishna, until people become your devotees, their material attachments and desires remain thieves, their homes remain prisons, and their affectionate feelings for their family members remain foot shackles. So this verse shows how the interchangeability of the world around us. And when it's used for yajna, it becomes transcendentalized. And when it's done for the self-enjoyment, then it becomes a limiting factor, and we become trapped by it in the material world. So if one has a controlling desires. Those are the small desires of material enjoyment, thinking how I can become happy in the material world, which are explained by Narada Muni to be irrational anyway, because we get only the amount of happiness that is allotted to us because of our previous activities in the material world. And just as distress comes of its own accord, so does happiness. So he advises that we not try so hard in order to readjust our material situation. However, if one becomes overwhelmed by a desire to arrange one's life in such a way as to try to enjoy the material world, this is a limiting factor for the soul. It limits us, and it limits our ability to enjoy, paradoxically. However, if we develop a dominant aspiration for spiritual advancement, then we'll grow in that direction rather than shrink by having small material desires. So it's not that we become free from desire or anxiety, but we change our aspiration from the small limiting desires that we think might make us happy in the material world, but won't and never do, to the big aspiration, that is, trying to please Krishna through yajna, and will grow because of that. So, along with the new year renewal, it's a good time to reorganize the way in which one conducts one's life, because we have habits in our life and they direct us in certain ways. Habits are very powerful. They pull us along. And we may not even be aware that we're developing habits, but this is a time of year when we should become aware. Take inventory of what kind of habits you may have developed over the last year. You can catalog them if you like. Would you care to think about it for a minute? Have you developed any habits, good or bad, in the last year? No? You all just slept in for the whole year? That would be a habit in and of itself. Can you think of any habits that you accidentally picked up, that you feel vulnerable enough, or you feel like you could be vulnerable in front of the group and the other 195 people who are watching right now around the world, and say what bad habit you might have picked up? Or can you say a good habit that you deliberately developed, that you cultivated, and that changed your life in any way? Anybody have a habit that you started or that started in on you? Shrut is going to be vulnerable. Now everyone will listen very carefully. What happened?
So I have one in both the categories, Maharaj. So one of the habits I consciously developed was to maintain my lists more meticulously of action items and to-do, and use the software to go store the things there.
Oh, that's a very good habit, right? Always work from a list.
From a list, yeah. And the bad habit was, I think it is because of the proliferation of so many WhatsApp groups and things like that. I've noticed that I'm going a little bit more, in general, getting disturbed a little bit more and visiting the WhatsApp groups. I mean, sometimes it's out of necessity also, you go and do that, but then you tend to linger there.
You can get caught up. Okay. Anybody else? Yes.
I'm amazed. I have the same. I started doing the to-do list every single day. So, you know, I plan my to-do before day, which I never did before. And I think I am pretty well addicted to WhatsApp. And I have to get rid of... I mean, I know it's very important. We have all those important things that we do with Sunday school or weekend warriors or things like that. But I think it is, my mind, especially when I'm chanting also, I say, oh, it could be an important message. So I try to turn off the messages so I don't get to
just
see
WhatsApp, it. Just WhatsApp, that's all? I mean, WhatsApp is kind of like a flow of nectar to me. Whenever I look at WhatsApp, it's all pictures of Sankirtan and stuff like that. I'm thinking, like, that's pretty benign. You're lucky if that's all you've got going on. Yes, Aprame?
So basically, like, kids couldn't be left out of the picture either, so they started using Hangouts. So, yeah, it kind of gets annoying too. And it's on the computer, which is even more annoying.
So you're saying it's a habit you could develop, you get distracted.
Yeah, I get distracted.
Okay. Yes, Kameshwari.
Hare Krishna. So I have a bad habit to share. So
that's not WhatsApp or anything, or Hangout. Okay, go ahead.
It is related to WhatsApp.
All right.
And so one particular, I have a group with my sisters because we about reading, but more than that, actually I started taking pictures of what I cooked, Krishna's plate. So okay, I can share what I cooked, and just because I want to share, I take more pictures.
Okay, I'm pretty impressed with the with how non-destructive your bad habits seem to be, but yes, bad habits or good habits that you developed. Go ahead, take three more. One, two, three.
Like, I had a bad habit of reading newspaper multiple times a day.
Okay.
Then I did a news fast for a couple of months. I was so happy that I gave up that habit, and suddenly it slipped in, and I found that I'm again addicted to it. So it's
this is very interesting. And we were reading recently in one of Prabhupada's purports about how devotees don't engage in the news. He said because what's going to happen is going to happen, and you really don't have any control over it. So he said the devotee need not divert his mind into that politics and the news and things like that. But it's very tempting because it's so pervasive everywhere. And it just shows how you can do a news fast for 2 months, and then, Kukshetra, you can slip back into these other habits and end up being really absorbed. You in the time that you spend reading newspapers or looking at Facebook and things like that, there are a lot of very productive things that you can do. For instance, reading books, chanting extra rounds, things like that. Yes, Kushal.
Krishna Maharaj, I have a bad habit to share that I think I am going to bed later,
yeah,
and getting up late, and that actually snowballs that my rounds go until next day.
Yeah,
late.
Thank you for sharing that. That's you know, with electric lights and all the stimulation that's available to us, it's really easy to creep into later and later and later. And then what happens is you got to wake up later, and if you don't wake up later, you'll be too tired to do other things during the day. So this is a very practical thing. Krishna mentions in the sixth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita that a yogi doesn't eat too much or sleep or eat too little, sleep too much or sleep too little. And so being aware of the fact that it's easy enough to slip into later and later habits at night, and then it ruins your morning program, and it can really throw you off, right? So these are being aware of these things are ways in which we can trim back. And Vijay, you had one? Vijay and then Bali, last one.
Krishna Maharaj. So I realized that my mind's wandering all over, and the good habit that I developed is started catching the mind after reading the verse that the yogi brings his mind back. So I'm able to catch my mind within seconds of it wandering over that this person is doing something wrong or I'm watching something good, etc. The bad part that happened later in the year is my mind discovered this and now it has made codes for something wrong. So I don't have to take that many seconds to figure out I am doing this or someone's doing wrong. It just says, and then I know that I've already offensed. So now I have to still get past that. So the mind's getting smarter, like viruses, right? You make those antibiotics and the virus gets better at that. So my mind's gotten past my good habit to inculcate into a bad habit into faster times.
Very interesting. Okay.
So, I have also good and bad. So, the good habit is I find while coming back from San Francisco, I go to work and back. So, I developed a reflection on how to attach some good prayers. For example, today I read about Hansa Guha prayers. I am finding out 25 prayers from Bhagavatam, which I recite because such a beautiful scenery, I feel like get something. So, Hansa Guha prayers prayed by Daksha in Bhagavatam Canto 6. Such an amazing thing. I said, wow. You know, even though Lord Himself came and... So, that's what I think I'm developing, that somehow I pray like Kunti prayers or something which is repeatedly I can continue. That's my...
I'm hoping that's your good habit.
Yeah, that's a good habit.
Okay, okay.
All right. Of course.
Yeah, okay.
And the bad habit is definitely, as everyone said, the WhatsApp. I joined like 6 months ago, pretty much active in many groups, and it caused some distraction over here and there.
Okay.
And because I saw one good example from Ramayana, which is Sita is telling to Lord Ram that why are you carrying, you are in the barn, you are in the forest, you are a Banvasi, why are you still carrying the arrow and the bow, why are you still carrying? And she gave an example that a king, when he was going, and he left his sword in front of his sadhu's home, and he said that, okay, I'll be back in an hour. The sadhu said, okay, I'll let me keep it. So then he didn't come. So after 1 month, the sadhu said, the sword is there, let me try to do something. Okay, cut the, you know, trees, woods, because that will be helpful. So he tried to cut the woods for 2 months. Then 3rd month, you know, that is not enough. Let me try to kill this small insect or something. So he tried to kill. Then he killed the deer. Then he became a hunter. So the sadhu. So WhatsApp is like that. It's dropping the sword. So you should be careful.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah, so becoming aware of what our habits are, it can be a very important exercise. In fact, one of the ways in which one can continue progress in any project is to list the obstacles in that project. Is Ramananda here? Well, it's never happened before. Ramananda? Could you please save us? What? From the water heater? Okay. The water heater apparently is a living entity. Okay, so one of the ways in which one can maintain progress in any project or discipline is to list the obstacles that one's confronting. And if you take time at the beginning of this year to list the various obstacles to any of the projects you're working on, not the least of which is your sadhana. What are the obstacles that you're facing? When you become very specifically aware of what they are, and then you can think about ways in which to overcome the obstacles. Don't be numb and simply accept the fact that bad habits are coming into one's life. And also be aware of the fact that if you deliberately develop good habits, that will take you in a very positive direction over the next year. A year is samvatsara. There's a lot that happens in 1 year, and there's closure at the end of the year. The sun's going around in cycles. And so if you take the time to encapsulate all the things that you're trying to do, and see what the obstacles are to them and deliberately try to overcome those obstacles, then you'll find yourself fascinated with the process. And this is what we like to call self-investment. You have to invest in yourself. And we invest in many different things. We oftentimes forget to invest in ourselves. So this is the very important place to invest, because when you invest in yourself by cultivating good habits, then you'll have a lot more to give to other people. And the best kind of self-investment is to train your mind how to think and what to think of. Because the as we mentioned earlier, the direction our mind goes and the place we put our attention will direct the way that we're going in life. So this is the most important part of our self-investment, is to be very much aware of where our mind's going and what we're dwelling upon primarily. So there are a couple more points I'm going to make and then take reflections. But one of them is that, again, beginning at the new year, to have a clear plan of that includes having goals and making them very specific, having deadlines, writing them down, and looking at them every day. So I'll say that again. A plan means having specific goals, deadlines, writing down what your intentions are and your goals, and looking at them every day. Can anybody repeat that back to me? Repeat back one of the elements. Okay, so we get that part. You have a clear goal, specific goals, right? And write it down and have a deadline. And what's the fourth one? Yeah, this is vitally important, because I may write it down, have specific goals, and then not be aware of it. But if I look at it every day, it refocuses the mind. So this is a plan. So if you have a good plan, then you'll feel stimulated and enlivened, because you know which way you're going. Along with your plan, you have to have a good philosophy. A plan will get you started and moving in the right way, but you're going to meet obstacles as you move forward with your plan. So along with the plan, you also have to have a philosophy in order to sustain yourself and sustain your plan. So the primary, there are various aspects of this, of philosophy that Krishna gives throughout the Bhagavad Gita. And one of the ones that he emphasizes again and again is to be tolerant. This is actually a philosophy in life, is tolerance. That, for instance, if you're traveling on a train and you end up in a station that is particularly odoriferous, that means it stinks, and there's a lot of clamor there, and it's uncomfortable, you may feel very disturbed. But if your philosophy, you can reconsider that it's just a station, it's not your destination, you're just moving on from there, then you'll be a lot more tolerant. So in a similar way, if you analyze that you have a 100-year goal, and this particular stopover that you're in right now, you happen to be in the Silicon Valley area, you may be oppressed with various bills and responsibilities and situations, but if you think that this is my final destination, you might be disturbed by that. But if you consider that this is not my ultimate destination, it's just a station, a stopover on my way to my destination, then you can develop tolerance. This is philosophy, being able to rise above the various obstacles through the Bhagavad Gita, through taking Krishna's advice, to be tolerant, to not overreact when, for instance, we may encounter in our lives the people who present themselves as enemies. Is that possible? Let's just take it down a notch. Anybody that annoys you particularly? No? You have a good life, eh? There are all kinds of annoyances that may come, and especially in the form of people, other living entities. And Krishna gives a philosophical advice. He says that don't become your enemy's enemy. And don't be dependent on the ordinary course of activities, he says. So these two things together, have your plan, have your goals, and sustain them by having the proper philosophy in life. And that comes from the Bhagavad Gita. You have to study Gita and find out what the basic principles that sustain you are. One of them I mentioned earlier is cultivating humility and also tolerance. We've talked about that a couple of times. And not becoming your enemy's enemy, holding grudges and so forth. And learning to see that this isn't our final destination. This is a station. We're just passing through. And if we consider that, then it makes it, we're much more effective in the way that we conduct ourselves throughout our lives. And now I'll take a few reflections. Anything that you've heard so far that's stuck in your mind? Yes.
Hare Krishna Prabhu, thanks for the nice class. The point that struck me is being tolerant. So it's not an easy task. So while being tolerant, you need to have other qualities also which will help you to be tolerant in difficult situations or easy to react. But it takes a lot of patience and to not react, as you mentioned. So yeah, I took that point.
Now, one of the ways in which one can develop a quality like tolerance, or tolerance specifically, is by chanting Hare Krishna. Because by having proximity to Krishna, we naturally begin to develop good qualities, like tolerance. And this is something that is mentioned in the Srimad Bhagavatam in relationship to the direct process of devotional service. Vasudeva Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Prayojita Janayat Yashu Vairagyam Yanam Cha Yada Haitukam. This statement is made by Suta Goswami, who says that when you practice devotional service, the direct process of bhakti, you naturally develop knowledge and detachment, jnana and vairagya. And these are supporting features. They help to fortify us as we move forward with the process of bhakti. That's mentioned in a separate verse. Tach chadadhana munayo jnana vairagya yuktaya paschantyatmani chatmanam bhakti shrutagrihitaya. Fortified by knowledge and detachment, we're able to be steady on the path of devotional service. So if you find yourself falling into bad habits or being overcome by the anxiety that naturally comes by the pulling of the lower nature from the material world, our natural animalistic pull that we want to try to enjoy the senses in the material world, the recourse is to chant Hare Krishna. Because by that process, you'll develop divine qualities, and that includes the ability to control your senses, which is based on an otherworldly kind of satisfaction that you can only get by the contact with the divine mantra, the Hare Krishna mantra. So practice very vigorously the Maha Mantra, especially hearing it and being very aware of the fact that Krishna's fully present within his name and that you're associating directly with the divine. And you'll find that you'll naturally develop the kind of qualities that will fortify you and give you these qualities like tolerance, which cannot be necessarily sustained on the mental platform. One may be tolerant for a little while, but if one's not actually feeling ultimate satisfaction in one's heart or feel that there's some recourse, one may lose one's cool very easily without that kind of perspective. And you can really only get it from a direct spiritual practice, especially the chanting of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. What other reflections do you have? Yes. And we have online after this? Yes.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. I really liked the point you mentioned that, you know, if you are not performing yajñas for Vishnu, then it is suffering. So time to time, you know, we are actually not doing yajñas, and mind, you know, very smartly cheats us, and we think, you know, we are happy, but the underneath reality is actually we are suffering. So that's a very solid point.
There's a kind of deep-rooted anxiety that's naturally there within human beings. The demigods are delighted, the animals are fearful, and human beings are full of anxiety. That's just the way it is. And the sooner you accept the fact that in the human condition means anxiety, and you come to terms with that, then the more satisfied you'll be. And the trick is to transfer that anxiety, that natural anxiety that you're going to have from now on till the rest of this life because of the existential situation that you're in, that's just natural, is to transfer that anxiety and use it for spiritual traction. In other words, do something spiritual and invest your anxiety in that. Is it anxiety? Does one become anxiety-ridden by taking responsibility here at ISV for a particular service? Yes or yes? Thank you. Yes. The answer is a resounding yes, because there are all kinds of obstacles that you'll have to face in the course of your given service. Correct? Yeah. And do they cause you anxiety? Yes. If you don't take those up and you just go on with the normal course of your life without performing that kind of yajna, will you face anxiety? Yeah, I proved my point. So if you take anxiety for serving the order of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, that is to spread the Sankirtan movement, that's where you take on your anxiety, then you get purified. Tapo divyam butraka yena sadvam means this is divine austerity, divine anxiety. So you'll make advancement that way. What other points do you have? Yes. Rajendra Kumar.
So, Prabhuji, two points here. One is from the Bhagavad Gita 4.24 that we were reading, and I think you made the point. So, when the statement was read from the purport,
from you guys.
Matter detailed for the cause of the absolute truth regains its spiritual quality.
Yes.
So, the picture that came into my mind was, you know, the food that we cook, and then we offer it to Krishna, it becomes prasad, it becomes spiritual, and then it comes an, you know, it comes as a mercy and it uplifts us spiritually. So that was a picture.
Yes.
Came to my mind.
Very practical point you're making, because all living entities live to eat. I know animals, they're always, like, if you have a pet cat, I don't have a pet cat, but if I did, I mean, I did when I was a kid, and I know that cats, they hang around and they're like, when are you going to feed me next? They just want to see a little bowl of food, and they're, you know, and they go sleep for a little while, and they come back and look, is it full again? Can I eat again? It's a natural state of living entities just to eat. And in fact, people, they buy houses, and the first thing they want to look at is, well, where's the kitchen? Because that's the center where people feel satisfied, in the kitchen. And so this is a major point for yajna. It's such an essential aspect of our lives, and with a slight adjustment from bhoga into prasad, one performs the kind of yajna that is palpable and which transforms one's consciousness and the consciousness of everyone around it. And it has to, now when you perform a yajna, it also has a systemic beneficial effect. There's a way in which, for instance, if you perform the yajna of taking Krishna prasad instead of just eating bhoga. If you just eat bhoga, you can eat anything. And there's no limit to what you could consume. But if, and that is bad for everybody. It's bad for the living entity, it's bad for the environment. But if you decide, I'm going to perform yajna by my eating, and you say, I'll only take Krishna prasad, then you find out, well, what can I offer, and so forth, and you offer those things that Krishna likes, then not only do you get benefit spiritually, but the whole chain behind you, everyone else gets benefit because of the choices that you're making. Yajna is systemically beneficial. Yes.
I had a question. Now, you were talking about making goals, specific goals, looking at them every day. So this question definitely comes up a bit by others also, that if we fail to get that goal, or if we fail even to try for that goal, how to go about with the whole situation where, you know, we are just failing, and then it may get to, like, one may feel depressed. So how to face that situation and then still...
You get a big jar of Globjimins and go sit in the corner and just eat them all. And look out the window. It's a dynamic process. You have to adjust things. If at first you don't succeed, try again. And if it doesn't work the way you did it, then readjust it. But it's important and helpful to have a clear idea of what you're going for. It's stimulating, but you can always adjust it. If it doesn't work out for you, then pick something else. There's a little booklet about this size that you'll see in the Prabhupada Museum in Vrindavan. And it's like a little book about like this big and a little pencil next to it. And you can see the list Prabhupada had made on one side. He used to keep little goals. One of them was something about... meeting the Queen of England, preaching to her, something like that. But you can see through the glass, he has a whole list of things that he has there. And he was very specific about the kind of goals that he had for spreading the Krishna consciousness movement. He spent a lot of time before he came to the West conceptualizing the ways in which he would organize the society and train people to become more Brahminical, and the ways that he would spread Krishna consciousness through the distribution of literature and chanting and things like that. And those were guiding principles throughout. And of course he adjusted some of them at certain times. When he got into different parts of the world, sometimes he made adjustments to those particular goals. So it's a dynamic process. Yes. Oh yes, internet first.
You ready? Okay.
So this is from Vaikunth Nayak Prabhu.
Vaikunth Nayak, wow.
Dandavats Maharaj, all glories to Srila Prabhupada. One takeaway for me is the point you mentioned about not assuming anything. If I remain hungry, then there is a lot more to get. If I think I'm more advanced than others, then I reach a plateau. Plateaus are dangerous. Number two, the 100-year goal you mentioned many times, that the only thing one has to do is inherit his father's property, is to stay alive. So my goal is to stay alive in Krishna consciousness. Your servant, Vaikunth Nayak Das.
I like that as a good reminder. Stay alive in Krishna consciousness, because it's actually kind of a rare thing. You see people getting knocked off all the time, and it's because it's easy to take it for granted and say, oh yeah, I'm already Krishna conscious, whatever, and then lose it. It was such a great opportunity. So starting with the basics and remembering how fortunate one is to have the opportunity to advance in Krishna consciousness, and somehow or other, not losing that opportunity throughout one's lifetime. You don't have to be a big shot. You don't have to, build some huge project somewhere to be recognized. All you really have to do is stay alive in Krishna consciousness from pillar to post. If you just do that, you'll go down in history as one of the famous devotees. You'll have such a legacy. And we've seen already devotees who are very simple, but just stuck to the basic process of Krishna consciousness and then left their body, became glorified by all the devotees and will be eternally glorified by all the devotees. Simple thing, bhakti. But if you apply it strictly, the simple thing very strictly, then it becomes great. Anything else from the internet? Okay. Who else? Yes, Kameshwari.
Mm. Hare Krishna. Prabhuji, you have always taught about writing down the goals, and since last few years we have, myself, Prabhu and Advait, we sit down on January 1st and we write down goals. So I want to mention about writing it down. Just because we wrote down, we were able to go over what we did in the last few years and what actually didn't work, which we didn't able to accomplish, and then go over it, why we were not able to do it, and reconsider it. So writing down is very important, and then reviewing, of course, we are doing this only in the beginning of the year, but we thought, like you're saying, we should look at that every day. And yesterday, on January 1st, when we were writing, we were thinking that we had to revisit it to remind us that actually, you know, these are the goals we actually wrote down. And so that really stuck to me, that goals, write down and then look at it every day. That's what I really liked.
You could put it on your refrigerator. You could put it on your mirror. You could put it on the dashboard of your car. Keep your primary goals in front of you. It'll help to direct your mind in a positive way. Yes. Oh, over here. Manisha, you ready?
One of the points that really stuck out to me was every obstacle is a station. It's not a destination.
Yes. That really helps to be able to tolerate that this isn't my ultimate destination. If you stop at a train station and you think, if you thought I have to live here the rest of my life, then it would be very difficult to tolerate. But if you think I'm just passing through, just it's not my ultimate destination, then it's much easier to tolerate, right?
Also, yes. I also like the point how our state of mind should be like asking Krishna for mercy because we're helpless. So that's another one.
Yes. Be a Kinchana. I don't have anything. Krishna, please help me. Please save me. Yes. Very powerful.
I like the point that listing obstacles helps us overcome them. And that every day is a new year and a chance to write down goals and make deadlines.
Nice. Yeah, really good points. Thank you. One more from the internet.
There are actually two, Maharaj. Do we have
okay,
time?
Two more.
Okay. So one is a message from Charu Bhatt Mataji. And she likes the plan for 100 years with a good philosophy to back it up. And then that teaches you to tolerate. And also knowing that this is not the destination, just a stop. And I also like the point where you said that you should write your project or goal, write your obstacles and think how to overcome. This will train our mind what to think and how to think about it.
Yes.
So this was text, and there's one on Facebook. So Sophia Alexandra, she says that she just remembered, and this is regarding anxiety that you mentioned. So this, she just remembered this part from Our Family Business, your book, about anxiety. Whatever a devotee's service, the greater the personal responsibility he or she feels to advance the Sankirtan movement, the deeper the transcendental anxiety he or she develops. Devotees who know this secret voluntarily tie themselves to Mahaprabhu's lotus feet with the ropes of transcendental anxiety. Chapter 12, page 253.
Oh yeah, thanks for reminding us of that. Thank you.
And one point, Maharaj, I noted was that in the beginning you had mentioned that time is our most valuable asset. And then you were also mentioning about the jiva soul is always looking for something to satisfy. And then you mentioned Billy Joel's poem on "I'm on the River."
New York side. State
New
of Mind.
New York State of Mind. Yeah. So I looked up the lyrics for for New York State of Mind.
Yes.
And I found a line there which is very interesting. So it says, "I know what I'm needing, and I don't want to waste more time. I'm in the New York State of Mind."
Yeah, everyone has that. urgent state and looking for a home. He's from New York, and he identifies with that place as his refuge. It's a natural urge of every living entity to seek that home station. I mean, even on the computer, we have a home button where we go back. It's home. And this is the tendency I notice around the holidays when I spend a lot of time in the airports distributing books over the years, maybe three decades. And always during the holidays, there are ways in which we see thousands, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, millions of people coming home. And that's something people look forward to practically all year, coming back to that home station, the place where they feel satisfied and where they know this is my refuge. And this is the ultimate goal of Krishna consciousness. We say back home, back to Godhead. The kinds of refuges, the kind of refuge we find anywhere in the material world won't last. Ultimately, we get moved along in unceremonious ways. But as we invest our attention and our intelligence, our mind, and our heart in Krishna, then we begin to feel home actually within our own heart, within our own mind, within our own intelligence, by giving it to Krishna. As Krishna says in the Gita, that one who studies the conversation between myself and Arjuna worships me by his or her intelligence. And one becomes oriented towards the real home, the real refuge. And this is the ultimate satisfaction, is being able to find that real home situation, which is taking shelter of Krishna, with one's intelligence, one's mind, and one's heart. In fact, over many lifetimes, there's a way that I am going through various lifetimes, and in each of them, I find in the material world a temporary situation that I'm ultimately moved along from. And sometimes people ask, what is the purpose of this kind of suffering that we have here in the material world? Primarily because of being displaced constantly from the situations that we try to put ourselves into, then we get moved along, and then the idea of karma coming to us because of our previous activities. And how is it that if we don't remember specifically what we did in the last lives and what's happened to us, how that's actually beneficial to us? Isn't it just kind of a cruel hoax in which we're being tortured here in the material world? But actually, we only keep in our minds, in our very conscious minds, a very limited amount of imagery and remembrances of previous activities. But in our subconscious mind, there's a vast number of storage. Even we know psychologically, psychological studies, there's a way in which in the dreaming state, many different kinds of experiences come up that we're not aware of in our waking state. So there's a huge, unlimited pool of experience that we have from being in the material world that gets absorbed in our subconscious. And this is a kind of memory. And it becomes evident in the way in which we think about the world, in our very attitude and the very feeling we have within our heart towards the world, coming from a subconscious level. Just like some people develop phobias. These are not things, phobias are not inherited from the parents. They're unique experiences that come from past lives. And they are sometimes exhibited in this world as irrational kinds of fear that people have. Some people have a fear of heights, some people have a fear of water, and so forth. But there's that is a kind of memory that we have in our subconsciousness. And our experience in the material world is meant to bring us to a point of putting our full faith, refuge, intelligence, mind in Krishna, and no longer taking shelter of the temporary material world. And when one comes to that conviction, Krishna says, Bahunam jamanam ante gyanavam mam prapadyate vasudeva sarvamiti sa mahatma sudurlabha. One becomes actually an elevated person when one comes to this conclusion that everything, my home is in Vasudev. My home is in Krishna. So this is the Krishna conscious practice, is to put one's full attention, one's faith, as Krishna says, refuge everything in Krishna. Give your faith, your refuge, your intelligence, your mind to Krishna. And then, no matter where one goes, one will feel that sense of home, of being properly situated because of taking shelter of Krishna. So there's a window of opportunity now at the beginning of the year to re-examine what we've done in the last year and to make strong intentions for what we'd like to do in this year. And here at ISV, we've, over many, many years now, I mean, it's remarkable how we are marking time now, isn't it? Because it seemed like for so long we just considered ourselves a fledgling organization. We started with such humble beginnings in a little house, and we just had a very small group of devotees coming together. We moved from the house into a little storefront. We got kicked out of there after a few years. It was funny because we were just next to a haircutting place and then a pizza place and then a computer place, and we didn't really fit in there, especially during Janmashtamis and things. But even during those days, it seemed that we were such a young organization. And now when we look around at it, at one another, and we notice that decades are going by. And if one simply invests one's time and energy into the Krishna consciousness movement, then one will find that through incremental improvements over time, one can develop an organization that actually has some impact on the world. This year, looking back at the efforts of all the devotees, when we first started, as an example, the monthly Sankirtan festival, I remember because I was there, and I remember even we decided to call it a monthly Sankirtan festival, and now it's just MSF. But our first goal was just to have two parties going out rather than one. Meant maybe like six devotees, three in one place, three in another, two tables. And it was definitely once a month. And I remember the first Harinam party that we had, at least we were meeting at our home in Burlingame, and some devotees who were new, they said, well, we've read about these public chanting parties, these Harinam parties, so could we do that sometime? I said, okay, the next time we're not going to meet at the house, we'll meet outside and we'll chant outside, remember? And, you know, it was a first there. And starting from these kind of humble beginnings, and then, as I was saying, the monthly Sankirtan festival was once a month, and the last, at least the last 2 years, maybe more, it's transformed from once a month to every single weekend, and then to every day. And there's been mission creep here. And so many So many new children have come, some people from all over, and the capacity has increased. So this is there was the intention of Srila Prabhupada to give us a venue in which we could invest our time, energy, our talents, whatever, in this yajna. What other kind of yajna would absorb all of us in such a universal way other than serving the order of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu? So 2017 was a remarkable year here, and we're going to very soon read the results, not tonight, of course, but they're not all in yet, from the Sankirtan for the full year, a ceremony that we do regularly here, which is an indicator of the way in which we're coming together for yajna. It's one of the programs that we have at ISV, but it's very representative of the way in which we're able to organize ourselves and cooperate in order to incrementally increase the Sankirtan over time. And that has a systemic effect on the whole community and organization. Yes.
Hare Krishna. In terms of the next generation, we have crossed 100 children.
100 children?
94.
Just now?
94 in Sunday school alone.
What do you mean by that? How we've crossed 100 children? You mean 100 children have been born in...
in the last, I think, since 2002, 15 years.
Yes.
So Sunday school registration started with 6 kids, and now today it's 96 or so.
So I think we need a census, like they do for... It would be interesting to find out also how many children have been born in ISV as well. Do you happen to know that?
I would say we have, from 0 to 16 in Sunday school, so it accommodates all the newcomers.
But I'm saying how many have been born here since the very beginning, born into ISV.
Into ISV?
Yeah.
I would say at least 50.
50? Okay, that's a lot. Very good. Tai Go Premanande. Thank you very much, everyone, for joining us here at the live studios at ISV and all of those who joined us online from all over the world. And now we're going to continue with a dance festival we have here, right here, on these beautiful wood floors. So we're going to move all the asanas out of the way and roll up this rug, and everyone can feel free to dance before the deities and sing to their heart's content. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.
Nacharyar Marman, Nacharyar Marman, Nacharyar Marman, hey! Nacharyar Marman, Nacharyar Marman, Nacharyar Marman, Nacharyar Marman.